This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
You. Do you know that bad girls go to hell? Bad girls. See the boldest and most intimate scenes ever shown on any screen in Bad Girls Go to Hell. See sex without shame. See violence in a story that is brutally honest. In Bad Girls Go to Hell. These are the men possessed with sex. Corrupt. And immoral. Who prey upon women. They are the thrill seekers. This is a picture with a new kind of raw, naked realism.
You know that I love you. Why are you leaving? I love you too. That's why I must go.
If you want to see a film that dares to tell all, that is truly a body and soul shocker, then you must see Bad Girls Go to Hell.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of one, and this, the month of Geektober, in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for quality. Thank you for joining us today. It is 503-505-6964 if you would like to be part of the program telephonically speaking. 503-505-6964. That intro was just for you, by the way.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. Rick Emerson knows what Dawn Taylor likes.
So am I the bad girl, or am I being preyed upon by bad men?
You realize you're asking if you're the bad girl as you're reaching for a beer cozy at 1:15. Oh, it's for your visa.
It's okay. For my visa.
Well, I mean,
one can't always be sure, Dawn. You do live life on your own terms. Without shame.
No holds barred. That's
right.
My motto.
The best part, by the way, is where he just says, men possess, and you can hear, like, the sound of the scissors snipping almost. The editing is so bad. Where he says, men possessed by sex. Not just sex, sex. All right.
That's extra dirty.
That's actually on the same DVD as, which I've subsequently lost. I had this DVD that was nothing but, it was, to call them grindhouse movies is not even really accurate. It's just like these terrible sort of softcore, like, sex films from, like, the 60s and the 50s. Some in the 70s. It's the same DVD that had the trailer for the erotic Adventures of Zorro. It kind of impresses me how well I can do that voice.
I know.
The thing is,
you are a professional.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, that's like a totally useless impression. I mean, it's like going. You know, we had a, you know, like our good friend Craig Gass, who's been on the show many times. That guy does niche impressions. I don't mean they're bad, but I mean, it's like he does impressions that his whole thing is to do impressions that nobody else does. Everybody, I mean, everybody does, you know, William Shatner and Christopher Walken. But I mean, it's like, you know, his whole thing was to, you know, to be the first guy to do a definitive Sam Kinison impersonation. That's like worlds apart from being, you know, the guy who could, being a guy who can do an impersonation of the announcer from the Erotic Adventures of Zorro. That has fundamentally no use. None. Zero.
At certain parties, it might be entertaining. No, might make you popular.
That's a lie. The only party that would, that would be the saddest party in existence, because it would be a party attended by you and me and no one else. That's it.
Maybe you could show the Erotic Adventures of Zorro at a party.
That would make my role as the impersonator of the announcer completely superfluous.
But afterwards,
there'd be no reason. It would be completely and utterly redundant and pointless. Don't patronize me, Don Taylor.
By the way, this piece of, was this for me, or is that, did you do this for yourself?
That is for me. Thank you. That's an overview of what Kelly Clark's going to be talking about later on.
Okay,
today.
There you go. Because it made no sense to me, but that doesn't mean anything. It could have just been me.
We will be later on in the program. We'll be talking to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, the news. She was on stands today. Also, Taser Watch coming up today. Obama Watch. Job Watch coming up. Another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And so forth. It's 503-505-6964 if you would like to give us a ring today during the program. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Todd Taylor, who I swear to Christ, just poured Vizo all right down the front of your shirt.
I did indeed.
And when I say down the front of your shirt, I mean on the inside. I mean literally on the outside of your clothing, Ted Stryker style.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm.
What is it? Is there something weird in the air today?
I'm not good with thing. There's no way I can
me
say
me no
it.
Talk good about thing spill.
Well, no, I stopped myself because it was going to be some kind of horrible double entendre that I didn't want to.
Well, now you have to say it. What were you going to say?
I was
going to
say I sometimes have trouble with things going into my mouth. And then I tried to stop myself from saying that.
That would be misconstrued, Dawn. Really, isn't that, I mean, it's not even that it's a double entendre, it's just that it's
It's just a single entendre, really.
It's true in every sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that is sort of a, you know, that is the verbal equivalent of one of those pictures where you think it's a picture of a white candlestick, but it's really two black silhouetted faces kissing. no matter what you see, it's right. So, I looked up, and now it just looks like I'm staring at your boobs. But it's
what else is new, pal?
I just looked over in time to see you just completely miss your mouth with that. The thing is, you've been... Yeah. I'm just going to give a blanket apology in advance for any and all sort of inadvertent sexual euphemisms here. Yeah. But you've been putting things into your mouth your entire life.
Yes.
Why do you suppose, and I'm lumping myself in here because I do this occasionally too, why would you have just now missed your mouth with the Vizo?
I don't know. Why do I spill food on myself like three-quarters of the times that I eat? Why am I like 73 years old and I have still not mastered the fork?
Why am I afraid to love? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that.
You should, honest to God, you should have seen me last night, because this is, I had like the Rick Emerson night last night.
Please tell me you're wearing the same shirt that you had on last night.
No, this is a different shirt. But we were here really late last night.
Yes.
Like we were here until like 5:45, and I didn't eat lunch, so I was starving. And so I'm driving home, and I'm thinking about all of the nice healthy foods I have at home in my refrigerator, like lettuce, you know, so I could make a salad. You know, I had some chicken. We could cook some chicken. I get home. My husband, who had said he was going to clean up the kitchen a bit, because the kitchen right now, honest to God, it looks like one of those places in Hoarders. And so he had said he would clean up, but he's like, I'm really tired. I didn't do anything. So there was like no way I wanted to actually cook anything. So I went into the living room. I like pulled up TV I wanted to watch. And you know what I had for dinner? Ritz crackers and spinach dip.
Awesome. Good for you.
And I just sat there going, wah, 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 you know, dipping the cracker. And spinach dip is one of those things that, like, the first couple of bites of spinach dip are so delicious.
Yeah.
And then you get to about 5 or 6 bites and you start realizing that you're just eating mayonnaise and sour cream.
It's just coagulated sin.
Yeah, it's just mayonnaise and sour cream with some green things floating in it. And it tastes kind of disgusting when you realize that. But then it's like, oh, I can't eat anymore. This is gross. And then like 30 seconds go by and you're like, I have to have another one. And then you eat another one and you go, oh yeah, that's right, I hate this. And I did that for probably about a half an hour, and then I just felt gross the whole rest of the night.
Oh God, somebody's calling to talk about spinach dip, or perhaps you pouring liquids onto your shirt. Yeah. I don't even know. Sometimes I honestly don't know if I want to answer the phone. Let's just... hello, hi, sir, madam, as the case may be. You're the first caller of the day on the Rick Emerson program, setting the tone for the rest of the show. On your shoulders, the fate of this broadcast rests. How can we help you?
I had a dream about some crazy clowns that I just wanted to share with Don.
All right, please do, sir.
Okay.
All right, well, this is actually, I remembered it because it was actually the same night as the Tom Likas when he came down and...
Wait a minute. I had to walk all the way down.
Hold on. Let's back up for a second.
Hold on. What is your name, sir?
It's Cliff.
Okay, Cliff. Let's back up for a second. Are you? And not that I'm finding fault with this. You understand? I mean, you know, whatever your pleasure. But are you actually calling to share with us now a dream that you had? What sounds like several years ago?
No. It is a dream that I had last night. Based on an event that happened several years ago.
Okay, all right. I was very confused for a second. Okay, so you had the dream last night, but the dream was based on some things that occurred a few years back. Okay, go ahead. And so give us the, start from scratch.
Tom Likas.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
So we were at the Crystal Ballroom drinking heavily. I had to walk all the way up Burnside to go to where I was going to crash that night. And in front of the bars there was about 30 clowns riding scooters.
Why not? Sure.
No. I thought I was in a horror movie. It was ridiculous.
So this is, you're on Burnside. You see the clowns. Did they sort of go by you like in that Third Eye Blind video where they just all poured by you in the street? Or were they just sitting, were they idling out front kind of just looking tough like they were hanging in front of a biker bar?
Well, it was some bar on Burnside and there was about 15 parked in the parking lot and another 15 came off of Burnside. And I'm walking down the sidewalk, and of course I freeze, and they all, you know, pull into the parking lot in front of me, and I look around them and freak out and continue on my way.
Don, do you have questions you'd like to ask about this? Perhaps clarifying queries.
Well, I was thinking that maybe what is the society that does the, what are the people that do the Santa thing?
Oh, the cacophony society.
Yeah, so that might have been a cacophony society event, which means they aren't real clowns, so they're only moderately scary. But at the same time, though, any kind of time you have that much clown activity in one place, very, very frightening.
And so this is now, when you woke up, is this when you woke up from the dream, or did the dream continue after having seen the clowns?
No.
So this is the thing that really actually happened to you, right?
Oh, wait a minute. So this isn't even the dream? Is this the actual event you're describing?
This really happened. Yes.
Yeah. I'm so lost. Okay.
This actually happened to him.
Let me understand this just for 1 second here. So I feel like we're off to both the greatest and most confusing start ever in this show. So you had this experience actually happened to you the night that Tom Likas was in town, that is sort of appropriate for reasons that I can't really figure out or quantify, that you were walking up Burnside and there were just all these clowns on scooters.
Right.
Okay, that was a couple years ago. Okay, now that we've got, I guess, the background on this, what was the dream you had last night?
Well, it was the same night. Everything was happening the same way, except for the clowns were carrying machine guns.
Okay, here's the thing. That was a long way to go to get to that punchline, but it was totally worth it. Was the dream different in any other way, sir?
No, because I still feared for my life.
Well, yeah, because of course, why wouldn't you? I mean, really, and you really only need, it's not even, you need 15. Only one clown with a machine gun is still pretty menacing. I mean, that's a guy who can really take care of business if he absolutely needs to. Did you wake up and find yourself, I mean, were you unnerved? Were your nerves jangled when you finally emerged from the dream?
Well, I got up, I was short of breath. I was afraid to open up the door to my bedroom because I was afraid I was still dreaming in a dream and then the clowns would be outside the door.
Sort of a lucid dreaming thing where you believe you're awake and then you open the refrigerator and like a spring-loaded clown head just emerges from there holding a knife in its teeth.
Thank you for that.
All right.
I feel very bad for you. I'm sorry that you had this terrible experience.
I have to ask this question, though. How soon after waking up was it that it occurred to you that you had to call and tell Dawn about this clown dream?
I'm actually not current with the program. I've been listening to the Back to the Archives.
Okay.
And I've been listening to somewhere in about August, the first couple weeks of August now. And there's some crazy clown watches.
I just had to share it.
All right, but I mean, would you, but I mean, when you woke up, though, did you? I mean, was it like 5 minutes after the dream where you thought, I got to tell Dawn about this? Or did it occur to you like just now? Like, how long after the dream did you make a note like, I must tell Dawn Taylor?
I knew exactly.
Awesome.
And I had to tell Dawn.
Excellent. Thank you. You're a good person, my friend.
Well, thank you for that.
Excellent. Thank you so much. You call us anytime, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day. May the rest of your dreams be clown-free this week.
Fantastic. Best show ever.
Thank you. All right, there you go. There's that guy. All right. That was a long build-up, but that was really worth it. In a sense, actually, that was the best possible way he could have described all of that, because there was this whole prelude, which I wasn't quite sure at the beginning whether it was the dream or the real situation, but then the payoff was just it was exactly the same dream, but with machine guns.
Excellent. And I like that my legacy is that when people have scary dreams with clowns, they think to tell me.
Well, of course. I mean, if you can't share it with the ones you loved on, then it's like it didn't happen. All right. Well, in any event, I don't even know. We went right from you pouring liquid on yourself to you shoving a spinach dip into your face to clowns with machine
and of course,
guns.
Dripping it all over my clothes as well. That was the other part of that. Now, it was like,
now somebody's got a dream
disgusting.
About that. Maybe you've got a secret. Here's the thing. Maybe you've got like sort of like a subconscious food fetish that you are not really aware of. Maybe you are not yet comfortable enough to share your food fetish openly or to admit it to yourself. And so as a result, though, like your lizard brain, like the primal part of your brain just finds excuses just to pour foods onto your body.
I think it's actually more like you like hurting yourself with bread twice. It's more that I just go, food, eat food. and then I don't bother to make that next step of like, you know, slow down and eat it carefully. It's more of a matter of like, put food in mouth while on laptop, while
course.
Watching. And then I just miss.
Well, doing things one at a time, that's for other people, Dawn.
Yeah.
I'd rather just shove the food into my face like an Impala into a garage.
And the more delicious the food, the faster I must get it into my mouth, and the more likely I am to miss.
The thing about the spinach chip turning on you, though, really is accurate. That's one of those foods that, you know what, here's the thing about that. You've got two different dynamics happening with spinach chip, and I totally know what you're talking about. Now, isn't there cheese melted into that sometimes, too?
No, you're thinking of the artichoke dip.
I am thinking of artichoke dip.
Really get disgusting, I think, because of all the cheese. Spinach dip is really, honest to God, it is just like mayonnaise and sour cream with spinach in it, and then I think they usually, if you make the really good spinach dip, it has this weird vegetable soup mix.
Oh yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about.
But this was stuff that Jen and Aaron brought to my birthday party.
Yeah,
and it was still in the fridge and it hadn't been opened, so I was like, yay, spinach dip! But it was some kind of weird off-brand. It was Delicioso brand spinach dip, and it was horrible. But I kept eating it because
no
you
offense.
Know. Because I just kept going, but it must be Delicioso. It's spinach dip and Ritz crackers.
See, you keep eating it because it's there and it says Delicioso. I would be eating it because it was free. and because, like, I cannot bring myself to throw food away. But but there's two different dynamics happening there. One is that it's something that is delectable or tasty or delicious. But then, and it's usually not even like a gradual thing. It is just you get one bite or one forkful or one crackerful too many, and suddenly it's just just feel ill. It's like the food has just become. It's like it's just turned into a pumpkin in your mouth. You know, it's just gone all bad.
It's just suddenly your enemy.
Yeah, but then and Taco Bell does that to me, which is why I don't eat there very often. Like what? In fact, hardly at all anymore. You know, maybe once a year I go to Taco Bell. It's not like because I'm some health freak. Obviously, I am not. But it's just. Like, and it's always when you're halfway through something that you've paid for, and if you're me, you feel like you've got to eat it. So like, if I get that like 7-layer Mexican pizza or whatever the hell the thing is, that's it. You know, and I've got like 2/3 of it in, you know, down in my stomach, yeah. And then I got a third of it left, and that's where your mouth closes on a bite, and you suddenly just go, ugh, no. And with the spinach dip, the second dynamic is, and I do this with all kinds of things, it's the topping off phenomenon, where it's like, you know, it's like topping off a gas tank, where you will be done, you're finished, you're like, that's it, I can't eat any more of this, it's you know, it's fattening, it's clogging my arteries, it's not that healthy, there's no real calories, I've already eaten half the bucket of whatever insert food here. You put it in the kitchen, you say, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished with that. And then, like, 6 minutes later, you're wandering, like, if you're me, from, like, the home office to, like, the bathroom or something. But on the way, you spot it sitting on the kitchen counter out of your peripheral vision, and you decide you have to go back in and have just, like, two or three more bites. And you just do that for the rest of the evening until you just basically realize you're grazing like a Holstein over this thing. I mean, it's just, and then you're just filled with shame. So I'm glad we can share these moments together.
Glad we can.
All right. Well, in any event, Taser Watch coming up today. Job Watch on the way. Obama Watch. We will talk to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. He'll tell us what's in the new issue. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
A man is burned when a car explodes. Another man is injured in a drive-by shooting. And Christine O'Donnell is not a witch.
Really?
Damn it.
Definitively?
That's what Absolutely. She says. She wants you to know. Not a witch.
Don't take this the wrong way. I have to go back to this for a second. No offense. I wasn't looking at your bosoms right there. I saw you do that little glance, and there's nothing on you. You are now you're liquid and food free.
You know, they're here. They're just above the level of the table. They're behind the mic and just above the table. I mean, you know, your eyes are going to stray in that general vicinity occasionally.
I was just going to say, I don't want you to feel self-conscious because I'm not implying that you have additional food in you, but it does surprise me.
Plus, I have awesome breasts.
Well, be that as it may. That's not a thing I would be aware of, Dawn, because, of course, you know, because we have a professional relationship. And
right.
So I don't look at you in that way.
Exactly.
You're really not even human to me. But I'm surprised you haven't made the transition that I did some years ago. And I realize I'm wearing a red shirt today. But, like, 99.999% of my shirts are black. And it's just because I spill things on myself constantly. And, like, you can go... Here's the thing about wearing a black shirt. Unlike anything else, it's not just that, like, it hides the actual accident. Like, if you're just dumping something, you know, into your mouth and instead you just dump it all the way down your front, it's not just that it hides that, it does, but it's that if you have to then go into the bathroom, like, at your office or something, and just start mopping up with a fistful of, like, scrapey paper towels out of the little dispenser by the sink, the black shirt covers all evidence that you've been blotting yourself like a drop cloth or something.
Well, you may have noticed that most of my clothes are either, like, black, purple, or navy blue. I have just a couple of things that don't fall into those categories. This is a khaki green, which is about as, like, bright and festive as I actually get most of the time. Because I found a long time ago, it's not just the food on my clothes. It's also, well, you know, first of all, I'm a round person. So if I wear light colors, then I just feel like I just look even rounder. But also, I have a tendency to just, like, not pay attention to what I'm doing. So I'll lean against the side of a table or a wall. I'll brush against my filthy car while I'm getting into the car. And, like, so I just don't wear, like, white or any kind of a light color because I'll just end up with stuff all over me. Like, before I even, like, get wherever it is I'm going.
I like it. Like, in your world, you're sort of like the pig pen of the Emerson News Network. Just like a cloud of dust encircling you everywhere you go, just covered with grime and grubby stains.
I'm sort of this female Jack Klugman character where I'm just always rumpled and stained.
Excellent. All right. Hey, speaking of that, just real quickly, have you ever noticed this? That... Even though it's not like, you know, the way you hold your pen, your fingers are always about half an inch from the tip, yeah. or further. And yet whenever your pen leaks, it's all over your fingertips somehow. How does that happen?
I have no idea.
Weird thing, though, right?
Yeah.
Like when your pen leaks, it's all over the very tips of your fingers, even though they never come into contact with the tip of your pen.
Hmm.
And it's not like the pen's leaking from the side. It's not like it's like made of a porous material and it's just leaching out through the sort of barrel of the pen. Doesn't make any sense at all. It's a total mystery.
Maybe it's actively attacking you in its death throes, sort of like dogs.
It's a sentient being all its own.
You know, and dogs get hit by a car or something and they say you need to like tie a rope around its mouth or something so it won't bite you because, you know, when they're injured, their impulse is to protect themselves.
When an animal is cornered.
Right, so the pen is doing the same thing.
People calling us. This is just going to be nothing but clown dreams now. I can already see this is the way this is going to work out. Hello, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program for Wednesday. How can I help you, sir or madam, as the case may be?
Hey there, I was just curious about the bugles. It seems like you guys dropped that and never came back to it, so are we ever going to get any of those?
I like how just at the end of that statement, it comes down to the fine point that it's all about, which is when will you, sir, have access to the bugles? I'm glad you mentioned that because here's the thing. I've got a tiny brain and it really is like an out of sight, out of mind kind of a thing. And the bugles are, in fact, in a box near Dawn's feet underneath the table.
And you should take them out and put them on the table.
I think, Don, let's do that right now. Let's
get
the, Cheryl, the last time Cheryl was here, she actually put the Bugles underneath the table because there was a lot of, like, Sarah and Greg had a bunch of guests in. There was a few days in a row, a bunch of people here for Fun Employment. And we just didn't want there to be some, you know, misunderstanding where somebody looks and thinks that it's like green room food where they're sort of allowed to open it and, you know, whatever. And so we tucked
it. I can understand that.
Yeah, because we're just, you know, we're savages. And so we tucked it underneath the table so that they wouldn't notice it. But, of course, what happened is we just forgot all about it. So Don has got the, Don has got the Bugles. What is your name, sir?
It's Brock.
All right, Brock. I'll tell you what. Are you referring specifically to the chocolate peanut butter Bugles?
The best kind, of course. I had the caramel, and you're really right. It's like you can have them, and they're good, but they peter off real quick. Like, you can't eat a whole bag of those.
The caramel Bugles are kind of like the spinach dip thing you were talking about, Don, where it's like the first few are great, but it's like the payoff diminishes real quickly, and all you're left with is that sense that you are just destroying your teeth with every single bite, and that the caramel itself seems like it's some sort of, like, plastic lacquer-type substance. It's like it's been put on with a power spray or a Krylon factory.
I'm afraid I'm going to hurt myself with it somehow. You know, it's like maybe it's not even that it doesn't taste good. It's just the idea that I really don't want that stuff in my mouth.
The other thing about the chocolate peanut butter Bugles is they've got that. It's like they've got a sort of soft, yielding exterior, as though they've been dusted with sort of a powdered sugar kind of a thing. You know what I mean? Where it's like they're crisp, but they're crisp, yeah, but with just like an overlay of softness. I'll tell you what, Brock, because you called to actually prompt us to take them back in to remind us of all this. How about we toss a few of these chocolate peanut butter Bugle bags your way, my friend?
That would be fantastic.
All right. So here's the way we should handle this. I'm gonna write down your number here. Don't be creeped out by this, but I can see your phone number and your soul. So I am going to write this down, and I will contact you. We'll be in touch after today's show sometime. We'll figure out the best way to get these to you. You can either come by the studio here, or we can. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Lentz, the deep dark hole that is.
Ah, Lentz.
So you're probably looking for opportunities to leave that area, at least occasionally. So if you could either swing by the studio, or we'll drop them in the mail to you. We'll find some way to put those in your hot little hands, my friend.
Oh, fantastic.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And one more thing.
Yes. All right. Thanks, Dick. All right. Thanks. All right. There you go. Appreciate it.
So in this box from the fine folks at General Mills, we also have a couple of bags of Chex Mix Chipotle Cheddar. And fruit roll-ups.
Yeah, that was, well, that's like the
Simply
sort of...
Simply Fruit.
That's like the, that's the token sort of health food. That's like when, you know, bars are required to put a bowl of peanuts on the counter so it doesn't just look like they're serving glasses full of death.
Well, you know, these things, it's, you know, I like, they're Simply Fruit, and they say that it's more than 90% fruit juice and real fruit. And then, but, you know, they got like 10 grams of sugar in them.
Well, I think it's basically fruit leather, right? But they've done to fruit leather what they've done to granola over the years, which is to take something that is presumably healthy, and then to make it appealing to Americans, they have added such a massive amount of sugar and fat to it that it has stripped away any nutritional value that the food originally had. Here's how I know this, because so Lara's going to be out of town. She's leaving. Goddamn, what is today? Today Wednesday?
Yeah.
Jesus, she's to be at the airport at 4 a.m. tomorrow, and so I get to take her to the airport. So she has to be at the airport at 4 a.m. Thursday morning, which is like, I don't know, 14 hours from now, which means I get to get up at like 3 a.m. And I usually go to bed at like 3 a.m. So I'm either going to have to go to bed earlier, or I'm just going to have to stay up. And, you know, well, the thing is, once I get her to the airport at 4 and I get back home and it's like 5 or 5:30, there's not going to be any peaceful sleep after that. So I'm going to be hosed. So tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun. So she's going to be out of town for a month. She's going to Turkey and to Spain and to, you know, some other damn country. So she's doing this whole like whirlwind tour of like a bunch of countries. And so I am already sort of looking forward to / dreading, you know, just like a month of having to feed myself and take care of myself and really just, you know, to have to remember how to walk upright, during the protracted absence. But I've already sort of, you and I talked about this, I think, yesterday after the show, where it's like just left to my own devices for like a day or two. I basically just turn into, to just like a Neanderthal where I'm just sitting, you know, on the floor of my home, you know, just scratching myself idly and just tearing, you know, mastodon flesh off a bone and, you know, looking out the windows to see what the other cavemen are doing. And
fighting off the dogs for scraps of meat.
Yeah, I mean, I just entered like a full on like altered states mode. But So last night I had to stop by Safeway to buy, I don't know, it was like aspirin or Advil or something. And even last night I couldn't fight off the temptation to swing through like the breakfast cereal aisle. Because that's what, like all guys, I just default to breakfast cereal and Kraft macaroni. My wife's not around. So of course, you know what I immediately go for is I go for the huge box of Quaker, like alleged granola cereal. Which is really just like corn syrup and oats. I mean, that's all that is. It's just big chunks of oats held together with corn syrup and fat. And like, you know, all breakfast cereal enthusiasts, I had like 7 bowls of it last night or something while she was at work. Because, you know, why have just one bowl? So, I mean, that really is... That's what you're going to be able to look forward to for the next month, is me coming in every day having ingested like 7,000 calories the night before. So, all right. Well, in any event, it is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Coming up later on, Taser Watch, Obama Watch, Job Watch, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. And real quickly, if you go to rickemerson.com or if you go to facebook.com/rickemerson, we put up the details about the Geek-O-Lantern contest. You can see all of the sort of the wares, the whys, and the hows of that. So we got a pile of things from thinkgeek.com as well as a $100 gift certificate for the best Geek-O-Lantern. And somebody asked me if they have to carve, if it has to be carved, or if they can, in fact, just decorate it. Because I know some people do the thing where they... It's the thing where they kind of, it's not bleach, but basically where they're sort of, they're dyeing the outside of the pumpkin or the whatever, they're coloring the outside of it, almost like it was a massive Easter egg of some kind. Mm. And so we've said carving and or, you know, just decorating in whatever way. So you go to rickemerson.com and see all the details on that. At the news desk, ladies and gentlefolk, will you please give your attention to the one and only Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The Portland Police Bureau's Gang Violence Reduction Team is investigating a drive-by shooting that injured a 19-year-old man in Northeast Portland. Police said the victim was walking in the 4600 block of Northeast Rodney Avenue at about 2 p.m. when a car drove by and someone inside opened fire. The man was shot once in each leg and was taken to a hospital for treatment of non-life-threatening injuries. Investigators said the victim had attended the funeral of 19-year-old Andre Payton, who was shot to death in downtown Portland more than a week ago. The involved vehicle has been located, police said, and they are investigating several leads. Neighbors said they heard 8 gunshots. Anthony Alvarado, one of the neighbors, lives nearby. He said the shooting wasn't that surprising. To be honest, it's not completely a shock, he said. There are shootings in this neighborhood from time to time, and I think it's just kind of part of life to some degree.
It's just part of the it's part of the local texture, Don.
Yeah.
One of the many threads in the multicolored tapestry that makes this town fantastic. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Gasoline fumes ignited a fireball inside a New Mexico man's car when he started it yesterday morning, sending him to the hospital with serious burns. The car exploded into flames when the man got into his SUV and keyed the ignition shortly before 7 a.m. Despite his injuries, the man was able to get out of the car and call 911. The man, identified as Francis Guthrie, was taken by ambulance to the University of New Mexico Hospital in Albuquerque, where he was reported in serious condition. While the cause remains under investigation by the fire marshal's office, Fire Chief Carl Kirkbride said the man may have had a can of gas in the passenger compartment that allowed fumes to accumulate overnight. A spark from the ignition system then could have ignited the fumes.
Jesus. Well, this is like that thing where I was, you know, after my car, this business with my car last month where I didn't want to start because the battery had gone dead. And then our friend Scott Landerville came out to sort of help me, you know, to help me. He came out actually so I could stand on the sidewalk and watch him fix my car and just be thoroughly emasculated by sort of just cleaning my fingernails while he, in fact, you know, said, "Ah, that's your battery. Let me just take care of that for you." You know, and there's the thing, if you return the old battery to the, you know, to the auto supply store, you know, the shucks or whatever, they'll give you like $12 back.
Yeah.
And so he
put the... Did you ever actually do that?
No, he didn't. Because he put the battery in the trunk of my car, and it he would occasionally email me and just say, "Hey, have you taken that battery back yet?" And I'd be like, no, I'll get right on that. But it was just like... I reached some point where the battery had been in my trunk for so long that I was just convinced that something bad had happened there, and I didn't want to open it and find out what had taken place. It was, you know, it was sort of a... It became like this weird Al Capone's vault thing, where it was like I was sort of curious but apprehensive about what might be lurking inside. And so then when he was by here maybe last week, 2 weeks ago, to drop off that CD for us, he actually just... He didn't even ask. He just looked at me and he goes... "It's still in your trunk, isn't it?" And I just said, yes, it is. And I hung my head in shame. And he said, "What do you think's going to happen?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. I think I just watched one too many battery exploding videos on YouTube when I was. We had that whole thing with my car not starting, and so then I just, you know, I just developed this morbid fear that I was going to open the trunk and it was just I was going to just going to be Lefty Rosenthaled right out here in front of the building.
It was going to be like Repo Man opening the trunk and seeing the alien and just being dissolved.
Yeah, I mean it's, you know, and. So I'm just saying, cars are full of things that can kill you, whether you're this guy who's just leaving a thing of gas around or whether you're me leaving the trunk and the, you know, it's just one of those things. All right, here's Don Taylor.
I was going to say, speaking of things that could kill you if you mishandle them, your electrical system, for example.
That's right, Don Taylor. That is a thing that could be dangerous. It could be lethal. It could be dangerous for children and other living things.
It could be.
As I used to say, which is all the more reason why you shouldn't. Why you shouldn't screw with that yourself. You don't want to truck with that.
No.
As they say. But, I mean, it's... And the thing is, like, and as a guy, like, you feel like it's part of the male cultural imperative that you understand how all of those things work, right? It's, you know, it's like the car is the example that probably comes up the most often in my life, where I walk in and the guy just says, so what seems to be the problem with your automobile? And I say, well, it's, it seems to be the, and I know that he is waiting for me to give him my best guess of what is wrong with the automobile, but then I just trail off in just a sea of ellipses and shame, and he realizes that I don't know what I'm talking about. So,
he just,
you know,
looks at you with that look of pity.
Yeah, and he just shakes his head and just thinks to himself, oh, that's a damn shame. I bet that family doesn't even, I bet they don't even answer the phone when he calls. So here at Legion of News, we want to talk about another sort of facet of this same syndrome, which is your electrical system at home. And the thing about the electrical system at home is, like, you can be forgiven for not understanding how that thing works. Because I, honestly, can I just tell you something? I don't understand how electricity works, like, period. I don't mean the actual business of electrons and the sort of the way that things conduct electricity and the way that atoms, you know, generate a, you know, the field of attraction or whatever. I mean, I sort of vaguely understand that in a kind of theoretical way.
I think that it is literally magic.
Do you ever think about this? And you probably have. I think about this all the time, about if you got the, this is, by the way, why you need Squires Electric, and by you, I mean me, but probably you as well, at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. I think about this constantly, where as I am going and I'm plugging something into the wall, whether it's like my iPhone charger or my computer or the DVD player or whatever, I think there's just electricity inside this wall, like inside the plug, waiting to go into the cord and then into the DVD player. And then I think to myself, how does the electricity know, you know, to just come out then? And where is it in the meantime? Like, is it just storing up inside the wall? Is it just, is there a big pile of electricity somewhere and it's just sort of backing up?
Like,
you know?
It's like a tank, like your water heater?
I mean, but don't you view it that way? Like, there's a big, you know, like there's a big sort of, you know, 500-gallon drum of electricity outside that's flowing into your house, and you've got to, like, drain it out occasionally because it just sort of builds up in there?
No, I think of it more a combination of just magic. It happens by magic. And also combined with, like I look at all outlets as sort of being, like, a hole that might have a snake inside of it. Well, you know how you see a hole and you're like, hey, don't put your hand in there. There might be a snake in there.
Right,
well, it's the same thing. It's like, I can put the plug in there, but don't put my fingers like near the hole because something bad could happen.
Do you really avoid putting your fingers anywhere near the actual outlet?
Well, I did once shock myself when I was cleaning my kitchen because I washed over a outlet with a wet sponge. So ever since then, I respect the outlet.
Okay. Wow.
I know nothing about electricity other than the fact that it can hurt me.
Okay.
That's all I know.
Well, don't be like Dawn. Don't be like myself. We're not role models. It's 503-252-1609. That is how you contact Squires Electric. They've been in Portland for 12 years. They are fully licensed and bonded electrical contractors.
Thomas Gill is now telling me how electricity works in the text box.
Here's the thing. It's just never going to make any sense, though. That's the thing. Like, I mean, you can tell me exactly how it operates, how they're generating electricity at the power plant or whatever, and then it eventually comes out of the house, you know, so that I can operate like a toaster oven. But it's not going to make any sense to me. I mean, that's what we said yesterday, that 97%, and that's not like a figurative 97, you know, it's an actual 97% of people who take the test to become, you know, a licensed electrical supervisor, you know, and install it. They fail it like straight out of the gate because it just doesn't make any sense. It's just mind-boggling.
It's kind of like being a 97th degree Mason or something. Where
it's exactly
you
like
learn
that.
All of these secret things that the rest of the world can't possibly understand, and then you have great power.
I like how in your head, though, there's just like a miniature Gandalf inside, waving his sort of, you know, Orko is in there just going, meow, and just conjuring up, you know, the pixie dust or something that comes out and, like, you know, it powers your rotisserie.
Only really angry, and it'll, like, bite me and hurt me if I screw with it.
Here's another question. Why do we always think that there are snakes in those holes? Have you ever once actually encountered a snake in a hole in the backyard or anywhere? No, you haven't. No one has.
No.
I mean, not even guys who handle snakes have encountered that. And yet, I think the same thing. Whenever I'm out, you know, like I'm in the park or something, and the dog is, like, going for a hole in the ground. I mean, like, of the 500 jillion things that could have created that, why do we immediately go to, like, there's like a coral snake or something that's going to be lurking down inside? There's no reason to believe, there is no evidence of any kind to indicate that there's a snake anywhere in the vicinity of that hole. And yet, in my mind, it's like the Serengeti plain, like every time I leave the house. Well, this was theoretically about Squires Electric. The point is, you can find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com. SquiresElectric.com, whether it's electrical wiring or Ethernet wiring of any kind in your home or your business, whether it's brand new or whether it's being repaired following some sort of a mishap. Not that sort of a mishap is, not that any accidents are likely to happen with people's misunderstandings of electricity. You can contact them at 503-252-1609. No job too small or too large. They've done everything from a single light socket, which is really what they'd be doing at my house. I mean, that is the thing. I just have them on speed dial, and every single time something flickered or didn't illuminate quite properly, they'd have to be there to fix it for me. They've done full condominiums, office buildings, everything in between. 503-252-1609. They'll fix it right. They'll fix it right the first time, and it will work properly once again. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. All right, let's do like one more here. It's Dawn Taylor at the news desk right here at the Rick Emerson Show.
Let's do our Obama Watch.
All right, here is your Obama Watch right here on the Rick Emerson radio program on the Emerson News Network.
Is more of the same. If you're not into Clinton, if you're not for McCain, but if you want a new direction and you're tired of the games, vote with me for Obama.
The dumbest show.
And be an agent of change.
By the way, now people are just giving me like ludicrous explanations for how the electricity knows to come out of the socket. They give the electricity one of those vibrating coasters that you get at Applebee's to let you know when your table is ready. That's how it knows when to come out. They just took, ha ha. All right, thank you. Here's Dawn Taylor with your Obama Watch.
The presidential seal fell off President Barack Obama's lectern and clattered to the stage as he delivered a speech to a women's conference.
I'm sure that Matt Drudge won't be running that photo over and over and over again for days and days on his website.
That's all right, the president said. All of you know who I am.
Okay.
But I'm sure there's somebody back there that's really nervous right now, don't you think?
I think
the
I've
president
actually,
added.
I think I've got sound on this, actually.
Oh, do
I
you?
Think, let's see if I've got. Now, I had the actual sound of just the thing hitting the floor, but I think I've got a cut that actually has him giving the explanation to. And this is probably.
Oh, I do have that here.
This
yes.
is probably Kelly Clark calling us here, so let me just answer that. We've just, this thing about you spilling food on yourself and then the electricity discussion has just totally put us off schedule today. Hi, is this Kelly Clark joining us now?
It certainly is. Hello. Who's spilling food on themselves?
You know, we've had a bit of... It's not that it's been... I mean, it's been... You know, it's not that it's been a bad show in any way, but it's one of those... Here's the thing. Sometimes... And I know this will come as a big shock to you. Sometimes right out of the gate, we're organized, we're on time, we're getting things done in the proper order, we're not getting sidetracked by just sort of miscellaneous bits of verbal detritus. That day is not today. Today is one of those days where I like 4 seconds into the show, we were already headed down some weird blind alley of discussion, and it started... When I was just doing just like the absolute very opening of the show where I said, hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show, and here's our phone number, and here's what we're going to talk about today, and I was mentioning that we're going to have you, Kelly Clark, on, and I looked over, and Dawn was attempting to drink some Vizo and was instead just pouring it right down her front. And Which is,
I'm classy.
And it's like the ninth time I've seen something like that happen across the table from me since we've been doing the show. And then we got into a whole long discussion about about spinach dip, and it's snakes. It doesn't even really matter at this point. How are you, Kelly Clark?
I'm doing okay. A little sick, but good enough to talk to you too.
Now, is it the head cold? Is it the throat and the throat and nose cold? Because I think Cheryl had that going on for a while.
It would be the throat and nose cold with the reoccurring fever. I'm enjoying it a lot.
You know, the worst part about being sick, I mean, it just sucks. Like the symptoms themselves are no fun, but to me, the worst thing about being sick is it is just this helpless feeling because your body is turning against you. It is just a little prefiguring of what it's going to be like when you're old and enfeebled in every way, where your body is just betraying you at every turn.
Absolutely. I think my body hates me. I think it's been hating me for quite a while now.
Do you have some sort of a traditional or home remedy? Does the Clark family have some preferred method for dealing with the head cold?
Yeah, Lipton chicken noodle soup, squirt, and whatever terrible TV that you can find. Right now, there is a marathon of America's Next Top Model happening on the Oxygen Channel, and I have now seen most of season 9. And I think that Joni has a strong chance. She's got a really good walk.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, I will...
Pretty much what I've been doing. I've been checking in email with work and basically kind of working, but mostly it's been, I think America's Next Top Model is healing me.
Yeah, well, you know, it's look, it can't... Not everybody just... not everybody clings to Jack Daniels and lemonade, which is, I think, was the thing that Sarah was drinking the last time she was sick. My wife goes
Yeah.
No, I was just going to, my wife goes right for the chicken and a biscuit cracker for some reason. That's the thing. Whenever she's ill, whenever she's got a cold, which happens like maybe once a year, she'll get the seasonal flu or whatever. And she will send me to the store. And at this point, like a good husband, I know exactly what I'm supposed to get. And that is I get soup, I get tissues, but it's got to be like the Kleenex, like the puffs thing that have the lotion like in them.
Absolutely.
And then, which are great, except then I always forget that they have lotion. And then I try to wipe my glasses with them. And then it's just a big smear fest. That. And then the chicken and a biscuit cracker, and that seems to be the triumvirate. That's the trifecta that makes everything good again.
Yeah, that sounds like a good health tonic, definitely.
Well, I won't give you too long because I don't want to be responsible for the further implosion of your immune system.
I'm loopy and feverish. I'm probably more fun. So,
well, we should have had you in the studio here.
Yes, I could have infected you in person. It would have been exciting.
Well, you've already infected us with your wit and charm, Kelly. Why stop there? Tell me a bit about Wordstock. Wordstock is coming up. Is that happening this weekend? When does Wordstock take place?
It's happening this weekend. The two main days are Saturday and Sunday at the Oregon Convention Center. And if you haven't been to Wordstock, it's amazing. It's stupid. Yeah, it's Wordstock. But there is a giant number of authors and famous people, and they all want to talk about books. And the Oregon Convention Center basically just gets taken over by amazing authors. And everywhere you turn, somebody's gabbing about their book or doing a panel on different literary things, and there's something for everybody. There's kids' books, there's like supernatural fiction, there's historical reenactments. So like if you're somebody who likes war books or zombies or heavy metal or romance novels or contemporary fiction or highbrow stuff, like you can all be in one room and your only love is books.
It's like a science fiction convention, only for literary geeks.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Don just said it was like a sci-fi convention for literary geeks. And it is, if you look at the program or the catalog every year describing who's going to be there, I mean, it's impressive. And there's a ton of things happening. And I mean, and they cover everything from workshops about writing to publishing to poetry to novels to nonfiction books. And they get a lot of really great and notable authors in there who, you know, people who really know what they're talking about. So it's
Jonathan Lethem is coming. So, I mean, there's a geeky kind of fiction kind of thing going on right there. I mean, there's a lot of people. I mean, his Motherless Brooklyn, Fortress of Solitude. I mean, these are big things. These are awesome. Joseph O'Neill's going to be there. There's a ton of local authors. You know, inevitably what happens is I end up walking around and then just kind of catching, hearing someone talk, and they become my new favorite author for a while. So, you know, and every... Sorry, what did you say?
I said nothing. I said absolutely
I'm sorry, that
zero.
Must be the fever ghost in my head talking. Yeah, no, Every year we do, we go ahead and we send out a questionnaire to a bunch of the authors, and we're always surprised. We think that nobody will get back to us. And Jonathan Lethem got back to us this year. Maylee Malloy, who's a fiction, short fiction writer in L.A., who also happens to be Colin Malloy's sister, Colin Malloy from The Decemberists. And we ask him, like, the weirdest, dumbest questions ever, because we're not really highbrow, and, you know, we don't care about serious things. We ask them, you know, the worst book they've ever read, and their most terrifying nightmare, and what dead person they want to meet. And I tell you, like, you know, amazingly enough, these authors have really great answers. And these people are weird. They are just strange.
And so Wordstock happens this weekend. And so if you haven't gone, you really ought to go, and you can find out more about it. I think it's wordstock.com, but you go to wweek.com and you read the Willamette's coverage of this. So wweek.com, the new issue is on stands now. And before you go, I haven't actually tried this stuff, so I don't know much about it. But I know you guys are talking about Little Big Burger, which is this
slider place.
Well, but it's like a ketchup that they've made that it apparently has caught on. Have I got the story right? Yeah. The ketchup that they actually make at the place is so popular that they've now started selling it as its own product.
You have not been to the Little Big Burger yet?
I'm a terrible person.
Rick.
No.
Well, you know what? Even if you went, you might not have been able to get in, because since it opened 2-3 weeks ago, there's been a line out the door down to the end of the block nonstop. They make burgers. And, you know, people keep calling them sliders, but only because they're the size of regular burgers, not like giant behemoth burgers you'd find in a fancy restaurant. They're normal burgers, like quarter pounder with cheese size burgers. They're not even that small. They're just, you know, for fat ass Americans who think that everything needs to be like, you know, 80 pounds. I mean, they're not
no
a
offense.
Bistro burger.
Well, I haven't been there. I don't know. I just kept, people kept saying were sliders.
No. I wasn't saying that to you.
No, but Rick thought, you know, Rick looks at me like fat ass American. Must be you who said it was a slider.
I didn't say that, Don. You know, you're just
Yelp,
inferring.
There's been a big fight about this place already, about the fact that, you know, the burgers are small, and they're not really small. They're normal-sized burgers. They're just our idea of what a burger should be, apparently, is the size of a human head. So, but anyway, what makes these things so great is the guy behind it is Micah Camden, who owns Yakuza and DOC and Fats. In Northeast Portland, and he wanted to open a burger bar, and he makes his own ketchup because he doesn't like any of the other ketchup. He has some choice nasty words to describe how he feels about ketchup, which are, you can read them in all their, you know, expletive-filled glory in Willamette Week this week. But basically what it comes down, he thinks that most processed ketchups are just tastes like crap. So he made his own, and his special ingredient is sriracha, you know, that really awesome Asian hot sauce. Mm. And he makes big vats of it, and he puts it on the burgers at Yakuza, and now Little Big Burger. And on a whim, they started bottling the sucker, and they've been selling out of it nonstop. So that's kind of, it's really funny, you know, it's a burger place, and everybody's really excited about the burgers, but sort of the breakout hit of this little burger joint is Camden's Ketchup. That's what it's called, and it's $3.75 for a bottle of it. It looks almost exactly like a bottle of Heinz ketchup, kind of the same sort of Americana-style label, but it's locally made, and it's hot and kind of vinegary, and it doesn't taste like any other ketchup you'll ever try. It's
excellent.
Really good.
You can find out more about it in the new issue of Willamette Week, which is out now, and you can read it online at wweek.com. All right, well, I'll let you get back to your work / America's Next Top Modeling. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. All right, feel better. We'll talk to you next week, sister.
Thank you, too. Have a great day.
Thank you. There you go. Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, made possible in large part by our good friend Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about him at 971-533-3211. That's how you contact his business, 971-533-3211. We will discuss that in greater detail later on in the program, as well as having did we close out our Obama watch?
No.
I didn't get a chance to actually play the cut, right?
That's right.
So we'll play the cut. We'll close it out. We'll take a break. Come back on the other side. We got a taser watch on the way still. Job watch on the way. And another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. And then remind me. Mm. Here's what we're going to do. We'll do the Obama watch. Then I'm going to ask you about ketchup. Then we'll take a break.
Okay.
Unless you think, unless we think it's going to take up too much, unless we think ketchup is going to trigger an entire discussion, which it might. Right. Here's the sound, though, of Obama. So I believe I have two cuts here. I think this is the sound of him because he's speaking to some women's group, right? And it's like the seal falls off the front of the podium and just hits the ground.
Yeah, it's the most powerful women summit Tuesday night at Carnegie Mellon Auditorium, and the presidential seal that was stuck to the front of the lectern.
All right, and it just hit the ground. Let's see if I've got the.
Fell off.
Oh goodness! That's all right. All of you know who I am.
So I guess not the actual clattering sound there, but I mean, you've got this sort of recovery, which is, you know, that's one of those things that when it happens, on the, it's an opportunity for the president to look human and to, you know, to show that he is able to speak off the cuff and whatever. On the other hand, if you're one of his advance men, like if, you know, you're the guy who's, you know, responsible for setting up the joint before he goes to speak, you know that you just have to start packing up your things like then.
Well, apparently that's the next thing he said. He said, but I'm sure there's somebody back there that's really nervous right now, don't you think? They're sweating bullets. Anyway, where were we?
Yeah, I mean, and I would say with good reason, because you know that what he meant, and somebody just messaged me and said, yes, Drudge, in fact, ran that photo for about 36 hours of Obama looking down, and somebody caught it in mid-fall where he looked down just enough to see the presidential seal falling off of his podium. Hey, did you see that shot of that Tiger Woods photo of Tiger Woods hitting the ball into the camera?
No.
It was fantastic. It was really, really great. I'm surprised that you haven't had it sent to you. It's... Tiger Woods was golfing. I think it was the Ryder Cup. Is that the thing that we just said it was in England or whatever? But he's golfing, and there's some guy from from the British press was there, and just was shooting Tiger and just had the camera, and it was. I guess the only reason the shot happened is because it was a mistake. Tiger Woods was supposed to be, because he's been off his game recently, and he was trying to putt like low out of some area. But anyway, but he shot the ball a little too high. Anyway, so it angled and it went directly. It hit the camera lens like dead center. It went like way off course and hit this guy's camera lens. But the guy happened to actually snap a shot of the golf ball like a billionth of a second before it hit the lens.
Wow.
And it's just, it's like one of those great sort of, photographs that you don't really ever plan to get. You just sort of stumble upon. And it's just beautiful. And everything is framed correctly. And it's laid out. And the composition of the shot is perfect. And it was just one of the that you could, as the cliche goes, like you could never have planned it. You couldn't have made the shot happen. But it just happened. You should have to check it out. It's pretty great. All right. There's your Obama watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Timmy Ryan.
If you like Barack Obama, versus more of the same. If you're not into Clinton, if you're not for McCain, and if you want a new direction, and you're tired of the games.
I never really noticed how he does the Doobie Brothers, you know, that
in the back of my throat
thing when he gets to the new direction line.
New direction. And if you want to
make a difference. Well done, Timmy Ryan. That's Timmy Ryan and Sarah X. Dillon performing that, by the way. Incidentally, I should say, speaking of Drudge and of New Directions, so I went to, it was on my, I'm pointing back over here to the printer for no reason, but it was on my iPhone last night doing something or other, and I have the Drudge Report app.
So you were pointing behind you to indicate that this is something that happened in the past.
I think I was pointing behind me because I often have the iPhone charging on the shelf behind me.
Okay.
And so I was pointing to say, I was on my iPhone, this thing back here, as though you wouldn't know what it was.
Right.
But I was using the Drudge app, and which just, because that page of his is so weird. The text is, you know, if you try to look at it in a normal browser on your phone, it doesn't work.
Okay.
So it formats it for the phone, but as a result, there's like a banner ad, you know, at the bottom of it, that sort of, funds the app. And I swear to God, and they must do some sort of distance or some sort of location sensing, because you must get custom ads based on where you are in the country, because it was a Chris Dudley ad. It was, for governor. And it actually just said, and I tried to get a sort of a capture of it, because on the iPhone you can do this thing where it captures the image on the screen. And it just said, like, a new direction for Oregon. That's all it said, like in big letters. And I was like, oh, God. And I was immediately, like fumbling with him, putting down my coffee or whatever and trying to get a photo. And I wasn't able to do it. So then I've been opening up that app, like, 50 times a day, trying to get that same banner to come back up so I can, so I can capture it.
Okay, let me get this straight. You can accidentally use the screen capture function when you're peeing.
Yes.
But when you actually want to do a screen capture, you can't figure out how to use it.
Well, yes. That doesn't make any sense, actually, now that we say it out loud, but that does appear to be the case. I think it was, it was because before, when I thought that I had snapped a photograph of my business in the bathroom, I wasn't aware of how I did that. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't consciously. In fact, I didn't even know that was a thing the phone could do. The phone, Dawn, has near it has near limitless capabilities, of which I am only dimly aware now. But having been taught how to do it, it's a thing that I find, it's not like it's difficult, but it's just two buttons on opposite ends of the phone or whatever.
Okay.
So,
all right. Sure. You wanted to talk about ketchup a bit, I believe you said.
Unless you'd like to make further observations about the phone and my penis.
I think I'll just leave those observations inside my own head.
Okay. I was just going to ask you, there's Kelly Clark from Willamette. We were just talking about the ketchup and how they're at Little Big Burger, which I've heard about, which I haven't gone to. We're in some weird... Here's the thing. You get the feeling that, like, the hamburgers are to Portland now as, like, Thai food has been to Portland for the last 5 or 10 years. It seems like there's a lot of hamburger places opening up.
There's
a ton of them. And where is this place at? It's not the place on Sandy, I don't think, because there's a place that just opened on Sandy and, like... God, I want to say like 40th or something, 45th. Maybe Jen was telling me about it. And I guess it's, it's like the new place to go for all one's hamburger needs.
I don't ever actually leave my house, so I don't.
But you go out to restaurants sometimes. I mean, you guys eat out occasionally.
Yeah, but I never know where.
But you don't leave
cool
the suburbs, though.
Are.
That's the thing. And it's like basically you get your choice of like a Red Lobster or an Olive Garden.
Yeah, we either make our own food or we print out a coupon and go to Old Country Buffet because we're old people.
Yes, and classy.
And classy.
I was just going to ask you this because you spent a long time in the food service industry and the restaurant industry and the, as a chef and whatever. I was always told, and I was actually told this by a guy who was, I never know the difference between a chef and a cook is, but he worked in restaurants. And he told me that it was like the single, in some kinds of restaurants at least, that it was like one of the most insulting things you could do to ask for ketchup for your meal, because ketchup is designed not to augment the flavor of your meal, but to disguise it.
Yeah.
That it was to mask. The reason you use ketchup is because you don't like the taste of the actual thing and you want it just to taste like ketchup.
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to see if that was actually true or not.
That is true. I mean, the thing is that the myth, the joke... I think it's something from old, like, cartoons or sitcoms or something, is that, then the waiter will report back to the chef and tell them. And, odds are they probably won't. And I don't know. And depending on... I've never been in that situation in a high-end restaurant that I worked at. I've never seen it happen. Because usually if you're going to a place where that is going to be an issue... You're not the sort of person that
would
is just
ask
going
ketchup.
To put ketchup on your food to begin with.
Can I get ketchup for this Chateaubriand?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's actually a wine. Anyway, hey, let me ask you another question. What is Baked Alaska?
Baked Alaska is ice cream and then it's frozen super, super hard. And then it's covered with meringue and then put under the broiler so the meringue crisps up.
All right. My final question here.
Okay.
In your experience, generally speaking, if someone gets their meal served to them at the table and they feel like it's not cooked enough or not cooked properly and they send it back to be recooked, is that a thing that people in the kitchen actually take offense at?
No.
Okay. So it's not like... Because I think people are afraid to do that.
Unless you're stupid.
What do you mean by that?
People sometimes... It usually happens with meat. Someone will order a piece of meat and send it back and say that it's not cooked correctly when in fact it is.
They just didn't know what it meant when they ordered it?
Yeah. And also, chefs will think poorly of you if you order your meat well done. And if you get, like, say, medium well, is pretty much as done as they want to cook it, because otherwise you're just basically making it tough and chewy and flavorless. And if you ordered your meat medium well done and then you send it back and say you want it, cooked more, they will cook it more. And then they also might, like, just sort of drag it through the trash or something before they put it back on the plate and send it back out to you. I have seen chefs mistreat steaks because it was perfectly good, like a really good piece of meat, and somebody ordered it like super well done.
They would have made it into a tire.
And it just
basically
made them angry. That is something that will make a chef angry because they actually respect the food. And you are showing that you have no respect for food whatsoever if you do that.
I call this a marinade of my balls. You will now enjoy it.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, awesome. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up later on, we have Taser Watch, Job Watch, and another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. This is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Stay right there. Back into this.
You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
When the little blue bird, who has never said a word, starts to sing.
To the moon above. jellyfish, do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. I've heard that lizards and frogs do it, lying on a rock. They say that roosters do it with the diddle and cocks. From Argentine without beans do it. I read the mossy beans do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. All the chimpanzees in the zoo do it. Some courageous kangaroos do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. I'm sure sometimes on the sly you do it. Maybe even you and I might do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. And I was just, when we just went into that, that was Paul Westerberg and Joan Jett, by the way, to answer some of the people who were asking about that. That was from the Tank Girl soundtrack, which really, you want to talk about, I don't even remember if I like the movie or not. I think I'm just sort of indifferent to the movie, but you want to talk about a soundtrack that created way more interest, I think, nationally than the movie did.
That's a movie my husband and I are really split on because I really like it, and he really, really hates it.
I just remember thinking it was really bizarre and wanting to think it. I remember saying to somebody, I'll need to think about this movie later and really sort of, you know, revisit it. And then I don't think I ever did. I think I just put it in a bin in the bottom of my mind and I never came back to it. In any event. So now we're just going to that song and I had like 17 people just type pee break on the screen in big letters. So I'm glad we can assist with the expelling of your urine. Let's see. Regarding the business of steaks being cooked well or medium well or well done, this guy just F the chef. I'm not eating if the heart's still beating. I'm not going to die of gout because that jackass wants to feed me blood. all right. I like people who are just all like pissed off about things like all out of proportion to the importance of the thing. We're just like seethingly angry about things that don't warrant it like in any way.
Which actually reminds me, I was going to tell you this. I tried to watch Glee last night.
Yeah.
And our friend Christy Turnquist is a big Glee fan.
That doesn't surprise me.
I admit I really enjoyed it the first season. You know, it's from the guy who did Nip Tuck and it had kind of a, even though it was about kids singing and stuff in high school, it had kind of a wicked little edge to it. It was, and then they came back for the second season, and so far, it has just seemed painfully self-conscious and precious and formulaic. And it's like now they're aware of what they're doing, and it just doesn't really work. They were having a lot more fun. It was a little more subversive the first season. Now it just seems like a big money-churning machine.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like as soon as it gets any amount of awareness, a guy sits them down in a room and he says, okay, now don't blow it.
Yeah.
You know, because he just, you know, and you know, he paints the myriad ways in which they're going to be able to exploit it, you know, for money. And then, as you said, they just become, then they stop doing it. Then they stop doing it because they enjoyed it. They started trying to be themselves consciously, as opposed to just letting the show happen. Yeah.
Well, I hit that point last night, that one hits, that you know the point I'm talking about, where you just decide, that's it, I wash my hands of you, TV show.
I'm done.
The gay character, who I love very much, Kurt's father, ends up having like a heart attack aneurysm thing, and he ends up in the hospital in a coma. He goes to school, and everyone's like comforting him, and one of the girls in the Glee Club says, I have something I want to say to Kurt, Mr. Shue, but I realize I really want to sing it. And that's when I just went, no, no, this is it. This is it. I'm done with you.
Pulling the ripcord.
I'm done. And I did. I just turned it off and walked away and just sort of felt like, that's it.
And you probably, and the thing is, you don't regret that at all, and you won't in the coming weeks.
No.
You will not look back and go, oh, if only I'd stuck with the show longer. I'm trying to think of the last time, I mean, other than True Blood, when I did that. Because, you know, it was, I don't even remember what it was now. It was just something about when Jason Stackhouse was dating the shape-shifting Puma girl or whatever, and I just said, like, this is, like, their life is too short. I am wasting the precious hours I am allotted here on this planet. But Glee is one of those shows that, as you said, it has a little bit of what I call the Ally McBeal syndrome, in that Ally McBeal was sort of the same way. And it's not like I've watched a lot of Glee. I started watching it because our friend Todd Workhoven, Todd the Corpse, told me that I had to watch it. He sent me this long email. He's like, I know you haven't seen it yet. And he referenced this this episode where they talked about Vanilla Ice, where they talked about Ice Ice Baby. And there was they had this section where they talked about how it was a great song that became a punchline because of overexposure and whatever. And that was enough to get me intrigued. It seemed like it was sort of coming from, like, it had heart. It was coming from the right place. And I watched it, and precious is really the right word for how shows like that can so easily become. And here's why that happens, is because precious is the advanced stage. It's like precious is the metastasizing stage of whimsy. Whimsy is really, really good in a show, but, you know, the thing about it is it's so hard to sustain. Yeah. Whimsy is like this sort of whimsy is like this balloon that is just sort of magically floating in the middle ground between too high and too low, but you can never keep it there for more than like a season or a season or two.
Yeah, you have to be adorable simply because what you're doing turns out adorable.
Right.
Once you start going, look how adorable I am.
Right.
Look at this. Look at how special we are. Then you just start going, no, it's not working anymore. Now it's just calculated and bad.
But don't you figure, though, that when a show like that, like as soon as they get their first cover story, or as soon as they, you know, the ratings for a show like that they pick up, or they get the key demos, they find out that are watching them. I just assume there is a guy who comes and sits them down in a room, like like Jimmy Fallon in Almost Famous, and just says, like, okay, now's the time we cash in, you know, and that's, you know, and so whatever you do, don't screw up the machine that's at the core of this entire thing. And that's when they start bringing in like a platoon of staff writers to make sure that the show keeps, you know, that the show continues to be the Glee that people like. But of course, but that's impossible because, you know, for something that occurs naturally, you can never contrive it. It just never rings true. It always just feels fake.
And then, they have to have their Lady Gaga episode, and they have to have their Britney Spears episode. And also, one of the big things with the show, too, is the first season, it was a show that was about a Glee club, and there were these musical numbers, and they were either numbers where they were rehearsing. Sometimes they would sort of transmogrify into kind of these fantasy sequences while they were rehearsing, where they got a little bit bigger and more overblown, but you knew that it was a fantasy. Or it would be a thing where every once in a while they would find a way to have a couple of characters interacting and do a song, but it was always framed in such a way that you knew this was sort of a fantasy thing. This is an extrapolation of what's going on in the characters' heads and their emotional state. This season, it's just like, and we're all going to sing now.
Right.
And there's no cleverness to why it's happening at all. It's just like, we have to do five numbers a show, and we are going to just shoehorn them in any way possible. And it's like, and it's like clockwork, like, and time to sing now. And then they just do. And it's just like, it's everything I always remember people complaining about.
About musicals.
Yeah. Like, people just burst into song for no reason. And I never really felt that way about musicals. But with this show, it really feels like that. It feels so engineered.
Well, and don't you suspect that the part of that is the heavy hand of the record industry?
Oh, yeah.
Because somebody has obviously, you know, just told the network, like, look, here's the check. So we're going to need the following 19 songs put into the next three episodes somehow.
Well, I have this news story here, actually, in front of me. The Glee cast has surpassed the Beatles for the most appearances on the Billboard Hot 100 chart.
Really?
Yes, for a non-solo act. The cast has 6 debuts on the chart this week, which gives it a total of 75 songs on the chart to the Beatles' 71.
Jesus.
So, yeah.
I never would have thought that it was that high, ever.
You know, Elvis Presley still has the most hits on the Billboard chart, but, you know, they could surpass him, too, because he had 108. And it's like, if this show stays on the air, you know, because they're counting, I guess they're counting, like, iTunes downloads.
Right.
Which are huge for Glee. So, yeah, they're making them churn out, like, five covers a show. And those are all going on iTunes and getting downloaded at 99 cents a pop on iTunes. And so, you know, it's a business now, and the show itself is just really, really suffering for it, which I guess, you know, the 14 and 15-year-olds don't care. But, you know, viewers like me, I'm just kind of like, you know, there's a lot of other crap I could be watching, and this just isn't good.
Well, and the thing about, you know, and that's one of those weird side effects of Napster and of the MP3, you know, the revolution and all that stuff, is that none of those things... The things that everybody was so happy to see the record industry destroyed for, you know, everybody was like rooting for the demise of, you know, the MPAA and of, you know, and of the music industry as it then existed. None of those things have gone away. They've all just gone somewhere else. So they always say that the money in an election is like water on a sidewalk, where it just finds every crack and every opening. And that's what this is too. I mean, they're going to find it. They will find a way to sell you their wares and to shill all their crap, you know. But it's just not going to be the same way that it was before, because they're not going to be able to do it via radio. They're not going to be able to do it via MTV the way that they used to. And so it'll all just sort of ooze out of your television screen via things like this. And I'll guarantee you that you will start. I mean, because it's that thing about the 18-month delay between when the initial iteration of something hits and is popular and is successful, and then there's that year and a half where it takes the record industry or the movie studio or the TV studio to assemble, write, create, shoot, edit, schedule, and then air all of the knockoffs. So it would astound me if within the next year you didn't see two or three more shows that found a way, as Alan McBeal actually used to engineer their way into some sort of musical performance that has really little to do with the episode or whatever, simply because there's going to be some guy making money on the back end of it.
Which
sucks. I mean, so on the one hand, it's like you've got more free time now. You're not watching Glee, but it's bad when you're watching a show and then you realize that this is just not the show that you've that you thought that it used to be or that you wanted to watch.
It's especially sad when you see something that really was fresh and really was kind of clever and unique, and then it just becomes a victim of its own success that way, and just becomes a product.
Well, yeah, and that's what leads to it. Yeah. Anyway, but I was just going to start into. I was going to pick yet another show and just go into a whole. You know, that reminds me of. But what are you going to do? So, what season is it? The second?
Yeah, this is.
God, that's a fast turnaround. That is a fast trip from good to suck.
And
one
season. And it literally was from the end of season one to the beginning of season two. Season two kicked off, and from the very first episode, it was like, wow, this is lame.
Right.
Wow.
God, I wonder how long it's going to be until they sequelize it or spin it off somehow into a separate series. I mean, there's some guys in a room going like, you know, can we do like just a pure country version of this? What about a Christian version of Glee? I mean, because you pick a genre and there's some guy in an office building with a checkbook just saying like, you tell me how much.
We give the black girl her own show and it'll be her sassy black friends and they'll be like a gospel choir.
I mean, but the thing is, you say that, and yet even as you say it out loud, you know that it's likely. You know that conversation has probably already happened. And it's just a question. It's not even a question of if. It's just when. So, yeah. All right. At the news desk, full of a life-loving hate, she's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
We do have a job watch.
Excellent. Here is your job watch right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I hate this job. I hate this goddamn job, and I don't need it.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
Ain't this job in trouble?
Here is Dawn Taylor with your job watch.
Casinos in Atlantic City eliminated almost 1,400 jobs in September, according to figures released Tuesday by the New Jersey Casino Control Commission. That is 300 more workers let go than the same time last year during the post-Labor Day slowdown. Atlantic City is home to 11 casinos in all. Each casino experienced layoffs in September. Analysts attribute the cutbacks to the sluggish economy and competition from casinos in surrounding states, which has forced gaming operators to shave off more jobs. According to the report, 1,389 jobs were eliminated this September. There were 1,067 job cuts in September of 2009 and 1,015 in September 2008. PressOfAtlanticCity.com writes that total casino employment has dipped to a level not seen since the late 1980s and is well below the peak of 51,560 jobs in July of 1997. Borgata Hotel Casino and Spa, the industry's largest employer, suffered the most layoffs with 272 job cuts this September. Their workforce now stands at 6,685. The Resorts Atlantic City said last week that all of its 2,000 employees are at risk of losing their jobs due to a change of ownership at the financially troubled casino and warned that mass layoffs could start on December 1st.
And somebody's asking here, how the hell would competition force you to shed jobs? Well, that's a fair question, I suppose. Maybe if they're having to divide things up into smaller and smaller slices of the pie, then they figured the only way to keep their profit margins the same is to cut. In other words,
well, if people are going to casinos in neighboring states and not traveling to New Jersey to go to these casinos are not sucking as much money out of people's wallets.
Well, yeah, because they're not competing with people down the street; they're competing with people in other cities and other states altogether. And also, if you can't increase your revenues, if you can't maintain revenues or start bringing more money in, then the only other alternative is to fire people. I mean, it's not the only other alternative, but I mean, in the business world, that's typically they say if the bottom line's got to increase, but you can't make more money, you just have to spend more money. And the fastest way to fastest way to cut your expenditures is just to fire people. And that is really like a sort of a canary in the coal mine, too, the idea that even the gambling industry is having to fire people. I always assumed that sin-based industries were just immune from recession effects.
I think they're one of the last to really see problems in a recession or a depression. I mean, people still buy booze, people still gamble to stave off their depression. But even the casino industry
is suffering. I went to Vegas last year. I guess it was whenever I saw Britney Spears. I guess it would have been last April, maybe. I went to Vegas last April, and it was on spring break, I think. So it would have been maybe April. It wasn't flat out deserted, but I mean, it was really empty by Vegas standards. I mean, I've gone to Vegas a lot, and I've never seen it that empty, especially the time when every college kid in the world should have been on the Strip, and there was just nobody there. Yeah. And then Laura went back about 6 weeks ago for a business thing. She said it was the same way. It was just dead. I mean, and that was just creepy. That was actually one of the first times that I actually – I mean, it sounds dumb because, everybody we know is unemployed. But, I mean, in a larger sense outside of Portland, that was the first time I actually saw, with my own eyes, the actual impact of the recession, that even Las Vegas, which travels which just traffics in just booze and gambling and bosoms, could not get people to come spend their money there. It was freaky.
It's the same way at the Disney resorts, because they have always just made fistfuls of cash, and they charge so much money for people to get into the park, and then you have to buy your food while you're there, and they get people to stay in their own hotels and blah, blah, blah. And you can see a sort of a desperation. I mean, when they have their last couple of quarterly reports, their profits are way down. I mean, they are still making gazillions of dollars, but their profits are way down. And you see these ads that they run for specials at the park where it's like, buy 3 days in the hotel and we'll give you the tickets to the park and give you 5 more nights free at the hotel and give you the free dinner package. And, we'll come to your house and shine your shoes. They're offering basically almost buy one, get one free packages at times where it's you pay for 3 nights and you get 3 more nights free plus free tickets to the park. It's they're so desperate to get people there.
What does it cost to get into Disneyland these days? What is an actual a ticket to get into that place?
We did a story on this. I wasn't sure if it was you and I or if I did it over in Ham-Fisted Radio.
Yeah, it wasn't us.
It was about 2 months ago that they raised the price, and it's up. I think a ticket to get in is something like $72
Jesus,
now.
Jesus God Almighty.
Yeah, it's really expensive.
That's insane. I had no idea. I mean, I guess it shouldn't surprise me. This is how old I am. I think the last time I went to Disneyland, I think it was $35 or something.
Yeah, I grew up in Southern California, and we used to go to Disneyland all the time. And, of course, it was never really cheap, but it wasn't ridiculously expensive. And at some point, they actually realized they were pricing out locals. And so for a number of years, if you could buy a special pass or you could get a special discount ticket if you showed them your driver's license and showed you lived in Southern California. But, there's a point at which it just started. They realized that they are a vacation destination primarily and just decided, screw the locals, screw walk-in traffic. It's almost like they've deliberately set themselves up to a point where I say almost as if it is. They've set themselves up as a business model where they are marking themselves primarily at people who are going to come from out of town.
Well, because the theory is
the packages.
And if you're on vacation, people get in that, you know, I always joke about how vacation calories don't count. But if you're on vacation, I think people, they flip this switch in their head to where any amount of money spent on vacation is okay because you're on vacation and that's what you do. And I mean, you know, which is fine to some extent. But I think people who are on vacation, I think can just be swindled like out of every single nickel they have because they somehow view it as just, it's like a blanket exception to any and all logical spending behavior.
Also, when I saw, but on the other hand, though, I mean, when they raised this ticket price a few months ago, there was a news piece I saw and they were interviewing people on the street in Orlando. And they talked to this one woman, and she and her husband and her two kids were in Orlando on vacation. And they said they were doing pretty much everything except Disneyland.
Right.
Because Disneyland was so expensive that if they skipped Disneyland, they could go to SeaWorld and to this other place and to something else. You know, they could do three other things if they didn't go to Disneyland.
I know this makes me a bad American, but the last time I went to Disneyland, I was really underwhelmed.
$76 is the one-day price.
Christ almighty. Yeah, the last time I went to Disneyland, it just wasn't, I didn't feel it was all that. And maybe it's because I've lost the child within or something. But I don't, I like to think that's not true. I think I'm still relentlessly juvenile. And it just seemed, I don't know, there was just, I thought I was going to like it a lot more. Laura and I went to Disneyland about 7 years ago. That was the last time I went. And with the exception of the Indiana Jones ride, which they had just opened, which was freaking awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
But, you know, the thing about that Indiana Jones ride is it was the best ride there and it was the best thing there. But it was the one thing that didn't feel like Disneyland. It almost felt like it should have been at Six Flags or Magic Mountain or something. Yeah, I remember we went on the Jungle Boat cruise. And I remember just thinking, like, it was weird because it didn't even really have a retro charm to it. It was just like being at a bad state fair where there's like a terrible animatronic thing in like the ghost house that's broken. You know, where like you can see the spring coming out of the side of the vampire or something. I just, you know, and the guy said, "Look out for, you know, hippopotami," and you know, and like a thing coming out of the ocean and going next to you or whatever. It was just terrible.
The last time I went to Disneyland, I was with my best friend, and we did what we had always done for years, which was, it was like November, and we went on like a Wednesday afternoon. So the park was almost deserted.
Right.
And this is always great for going on rides, but it was very weird because we went to Toontown, and I had never done the Toontown thing. And there's this one area where it's Mickey Mouse's house, and you walk in the front door, and it's like Toontown is set up like a little town, a little right. cartoon town. Mickey Mouse's house, you go in, and there's like furniture, big cartoon, life-size cartoon furniture, and bookcases with memorabilia, like, you know, awards Mickey has won, and an actual photograph of Mickey standing there with Walt Disney and stuff. There's an answering machine next to the phone, and you can hear Donald Duck's voice on the answering machine leaving Mickey a message. Then you walk through, and you go into the kitchen, and the thing is, I think basically the whole thing is a setup to go to an area where you get your picture taken
right.
with Mickey. But I didn't know this. I didn't know what this thing was about. And I think it's also set up so that it's just to keep you entertained while you're in line. But we weren't in line. There were two other people in Mickey Mouse's house while we were there. So we're walking through. We go to the kitchen. There's groceries. Mickey's laundry is in the washing machine.
This is creeping me out, actually, in a strange way.
Yeah, His big white gloves and his shorts are tumbling in the washing machine, and you can see them. And then you go through, and then there's a backyard, and it's nighttime, and it's the backyard, and there's vegetables and things. And what it does is it really gives you this sense of, like, Mickey is real. And then we go, and we walk down, and then there's this long hallway with a red carpet, and I am not making this up. At the end of the carpet was a midget. And the midget is looking down the hallway, and he starts gesturing to us to come to him.
Join us.
Come on down, he says. And at this point, I'm just getting very Twin Peaksy about this, that we have been in Mickey's house, and there's no Mickey, and now there's a midget.
Let me lick your buttersoft skin.
So we go down the hall, and he goes, do you want to meet Mickey? And remember, I had no idea where this thing was going to dump out. So I go, sure. And we walk into this room, and there's this whole holding area with these pens to keep you in line, and they show you cartoons. And I go, okay, we're going to get... Oh, actually, that was the first thing. And so I think this is what this is. We get to stand here and watch cartoons for a while. And then the door opens, and this woman says, do you want to meet Mickey? And I said, okay. And then they ushered us into a little room, and there's like a line of doors. So I guess there's like five or six Mickeys, but you walk into one door, and there's Mickey Mouse. There's like a life-sized damn Mickey Mouse in this room.
After having walked through this whole thing, acclimating you to the idea that he's real.
Yes, and it completely freaked me, and the midget, and he completely freaked me out. And then they were like, you want your picture taken with Mickey? I was sure. And so I stood next to Mickey, and the person in the Mickey suit put their arm around me, and my friend took a picture. We walked out, and we like made it about halfway down the hall towards freedom, and she and I both looked at each other and just went, ah! And screamed and just ran the rest of the way out into sunlight.
That's awesome. The master would like a copy of your soul now.
It was the freakiest damn thing.
This is why people shouldn't drop acid when they go to Disneyland. I think it was Laura had a friend of hers that had gotten really, really, really high, just taken all of this acid, and then went on the Small World ride, which I could have told her was a bad idea. And she said it was the same thing. It was like the sort of creeping uneasiness. And it was, you know, and then she said, like, the song started to, like, echo inside her own head. It was, you know, na 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 na. And then she described it as, like when somebody's singing a song in a round where the song starts to loop back in on itself, except there was no round happening except in her head. And then it was, she said that, like, as she went through the Small World ride, every country she passed, because, you know, it's like they take you through Sweden and Japan or whatever, and she's like, every time she passed a country... You know, normally it's like you move from like Sweden to Norway to Finland to Holland. But she said it wasn't that way for her because she was all just tripping on acid. That she like it was like she kept each country with her as she went along, and then kept adding new countries until, as she put it, there were thousands of people singing the song in her head, all in different languages at the same time. None of it making any sense. And then she finally got out of the Small World ride and just crumpled up against a trash can and began sobbing uncontrollably. Which is sort of great. How old were you when this happened?
This was actually only a few years ago.
I was so hoping that was the answer. I thought that was the case. I wanted to make sure.
No, I was a fully adult human being when this happened to me.
Awesome. Well done. Well, that's all right. You don't have to feel bad about it. I mean, and you weren't high, which is the strange thing about that. I don't mean it's strange that you weren't high. I mean, it was just strange that, like, you would have... That's how immersive that environment is, and that it's a midget.
The midget was something I didn't need.
Jesus. Well, that's right. I don't think I've told you this. When I mentioned going to Disneyland with Laura a few years ago, we did a whole thing. We did not do Universal Studios, but we did... Because neither of us... had been there for years and years, and she spent a lot of time in Burbank when she was a kid, and I spent some time in L.A., but we hadn't been there for a long time. So we go to Disneyland, and that was, you know, it was sort of, eh. And I'm like, well, you know, screw this. Let's go to Magic Mountain. At some point between being a child and now, I have just become a huge, huge sissy. And I don't know when that happened. I have this theory that it is because now as an adult— I have, like, actual real stresses and problems and fears, you know, in your life. You know, as you get older, you've got, you know, job fears and family and, you know, am I going to get the cancer and the whatever.
You experience anxiety on a weekly, if not daily, basis.
Exactly. Well, that's like you said, you don't need to play The Sims because, like, you've got a real life where you have to actually have real accomplishments and make money so you can buy real things for your real home so you're not evicted under the real street.
Yes.
And that was my thing. So we go to Six Flags, and I'm like, oh, this is Magic Mountain. It's going to be awesome. They have this thing called the Free Fall. That's just a big box that drops you.
Oh, God.
And you and I have talked about that.
Yeah.
And they have a and my big thing, my selling point to her was that they had Colossus, which is the world's largest wooden roller coaster.
Which is quite terrific.
And which they had, they feature that in National Lampoon's Vacation. That's the big screaming meme that they go on when they kidnap Roy Wally.
I love roller coasters. Cannot stand the dropping things.
No, the dropping thing is freaky.
No.
And I was like, you know, maybe we'll do that later, but let's start with Colossus, you know, and I'm describing to her how great it is. And it's like, and the great terrifying thing about Colossus is it's a wooden roller coaster. And it is, I mean, I take them at their word when they say that the insurance guys are out there like every day and they make sure the thing's not going to fall apart. But the thing about Colossus is it creaks and sort of goes, because it's made of wood and it's like groans back and forth.
But that's also part, if you talk to roller coaster aficionados, that's part of why wooden roller coasters are so great, is they actually move and give a little bit.
Because otherwise they'd snap clean off, Don.
Yes.
That's why the Space Needle during a windstorm goes 3 feet side to side. And I asked a guy, and so do skyscrapers, and I asked a guy, why would you want the Space Needle to lean 3 feet in the wind? And he said, because it'll break off and fall otherwise. So we go on Colossus, and I'm telling him, like, this is going to be awesome. We got about halfway through that ride, and it was like your thing with Glee. I just said, I don't need to do this anymore. This is unpleasant. This isn't enjoyable. I'm not having a good time. But I kept these feelings inside because that's what men do. And we got off the roller coaster, and she's like, okay, let's. She's like, well, that was the old one. Let's go on, like, the Viper or whatever the hell it is. You know, let's go on the Cobra Strike. And that's one of those ones where you're dangling down.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And it swings you out.
And your legs are just dangling free underneath you. And and the only thing that's holding you in is this thing in between your crotch.
That you can't see.
Yeah.
Because you're looking straight out.
And they just kind of snap this thing down over your shoulders, and it doesn't feel like it's enough.
The one that she went on, and I say she because we were standing in line, and I finally had this long, dark moment of the soul. Where I said, like, okay, Emerson, this is make it or break it, or you gotta choose. And I finally just said, baby, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can go on the roller coaster. And she said, well, what do you mean? And I said, I found that last ride really terrifying, and I don't think I can do this. And I was like 34 or something, and it was a difficult thing to say out loud. Yeah. As like a guy, and also the one who was like so like, you know, let's spend the $65 for a ticket. And then I was just, and she's like, well, I'm still going on. And I said, okay, I'll just be waiting on this bench. And I swear to Christ, she actually just turned. She goes, okay, hold my purse. And she just handed me. So I literally sat holding my wife's purse.
You were sitting on the bench of shame, holding the purse next to the baby strollers.
Yes, exactly. While my wife went on this thing. And it was the thing where they strap you in, hanging down like in a parachute. And then you go. But then, how do I describe this? They put the thing down. They strap it around your chute style. But then you go up on your back. Head first, almost as though, imagine that you were laying on your back on an escalator that was going up. That's kind of what it is. And then you get to the top, and it just keeps going, and you basically swing, like, head over heels and start plunging down. And it's engineered so that for the first 500 yards of the ride or so, you cannot see any of the track. You can't see any of the supporting thing. So it does, she said, it is exactly as though you are in just falling through the air, like, alone.
See, and falling is the thing that really scares me. I like roller coasters because I like things that go really fast. I really enjoy things going really fast. And I like roller coasters, too. I don't like the dangly one because I don't feel safe in it. But if it's something that, like, I'm actually sitting on something and it's clamped down over my shoulders and I feel secure inside the structure, I really like a good roller coaster, and I like going fast and the corkscrews, right, and all of that stuff. But, yeah, the dangly one, no, and also free fall, I did it once.
Yeah.
Once. And it so traumatized me that to this day I still remember every moment of that experience, the going up the elevator thing and then how it stops and it goes clank. And gives you just enough time to see.
I'm really high up here.
A big, how high you are, and that there's a big square open space in front of you, exactly the size of the car you're sitting in. Then it pushes you out over the empty space and goes thunk, and waits for a moment, and then it just pulls the bottom out of it, and you fall, and you think you're going to die.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't go, ee, this is fun. No, you go, ee, because you think you're going to die.
It really is. I think it is to a strong cup of coffee. I've bungled the illusion now. I've subverted the metaphor. But there's nothing really enjoyable about that ride. I was going to say it is to a regular carnival ride as like meth is to a cup of coffee. Where it's not like you're sitting there and you're relaxing and reading the paper and enjoying the many, many tones and flavors of the drink while you fill out the New York Times crossword puzzle. It really is just like kind of going, ah! You know, and then it's over. And it's done in like half a second.
No,
you know
what it is to regular roller coasters. It's the equivalent of snorting nitrous oxide, where you go, "Holy crap! It feels like my brain is swelling up inside my head," and then it goes away, and then you go, "Why was that supposed to be fun?"
Exactly. Why did my uncle lie to me about that ride? You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll have your Taser Watch here in just a few, and then we'll have the greatest songs ever made. Then we'll let Don skedaddle out of here. You've got Hamfister Radio coming up today at 4 o'clock at PDX.FM. What will be on today's installment of Hamfister Radio?
Today, my friend Eric D. Snyder will be joining us, and he'll tell us about things he saw at the Telluride Film Festival and at Fantastic Fest in Austin. And we'll probably be talking about The Social Network a little bit.
You know, and depending on what level of education you had and who you were, Don, you might have screamed out, "Dios mío."
Yeah, I might have.
As that rival. But you probably wouldn't have because you didn't really have time to scream.
Madre de Dios!
Were you trying to do an I Regret Nothing?
No, that was a Mother of God.
So okay. I have to figure out the I Regret Nothing thing
in
Spanish.
Yeah, we do. Clara Greble could tell you.
That's right. She could, Don, because it's what she does at Castalia Language Center, which is in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. They limit class sizes to 8 people there, which means, well, first of all, here, it really is, I mean, it's sort of a zero-sum game. There's more people in a class that a teacher is having to talk to and work with and clarify for. It just becomes more and more difficult for you to learn things at a rapid pace. Rapido, as they say. For you, you know, this is sort of, you know, to grok everything that you need to really learn to speak the language, you know, in a conversational way. Because I guess it's functional if you're sort of being the stilted Spanish-speaking guy where it's like it's all coming out in some sort of wooden delivery. But you don't want to do that. I mean, you don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be that guy who's, like, consulting a phrase book, your Babel translator, and then just hoping that what you say is correct. You want to be able to talk the way that people actually talk. You want to speak the way that people actually speak. And Castalia Language Center will help you do that. They limit class sizes, again, to 8 people, which means that every class you go to, you're going to get near individual attention. And classes for adults, which means that they're going to be able to work with your schedule. They're going to be able to find a day and a time to work with what you need. And it's also not a one-size-fits-all class. I mean, it's not just for people who, you know, starting from scratch. So if you already have some Spanish knowledge, you speak a little bit of Spanish, but not as much as you like, they have a class for that. They have an intermediate class, and they also have advanced classes if you're just trying to brush up on it, just trying to polish, maybe before you travel or before you move somewhere. You can find out more about it at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Now people are just requesting that you scream things in Spanish more often. PortlandSpanish.com is how you contact Castalia Language Center. They are a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson radio program. Castalia Language Center. Let's pay another visit to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's get the Taser Watch done since it's almost the end of the show.
Let's do that. Here's your Taser Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program. All right, here's, by the way, can I just tell you this? I believe, I don't know that for sure that this is true, but we I have received our first entry in the Geeko Lantern contest.
Really?
I don't even want to say what it is. I'll show it to you later.
Okay.
I'll spring it up to people later. It's awesome. Here is Don Taylor.
An Aboriginal man who was tasered 13 times by West Australian police officers was subjected to the same treatment a week later by prison officers, according to corrective services officials. The West Australian Corruption Watchdog on Monday revealed that Kevin Spratt, taken to the East Perth Watch House just after 11 p.m. on Saturday, August 30th, 2008, was tasered 11 times after refusing to comply with a strip search. In closed-circuit television released by the Corruption and Crime Commission on Monday, an officer can be heard saying, "Do you want to go again?" before tasering the now 41-year-old on 2 more occasions. The Department of Corrective Services have confirmed Mr. Spratt was tasered 11 times a week later when they tried to extract him from his cell at the East Perth lockup. The prisoner was said to be acting in an irrational and violent way. A spokesman said he was in an observation cell and unrestrained. According to the department, Mr. Spratt refused to cooperate with the the officer despite verbal negotiations and clear instructions to allow officers to restrain him. He was also warned that force, including the use of taser, would be used against him.
Isn't Mr. Spratt a character from like a Grimm story? Isn't there a fairy tale?
Jack Spratt.
What did he do?
He would eat no fat, and his wife would eat no lean.
Was there some sort of eventual punishment or maybe ironic conclusion to that story?
I don't remember how it ends for them.
Okay.
Not well, I would imagine, though, because, you know, she was quite fat and he was quite thin because of their dietary.
Did one of them just end up consuming the other, do you suppose?
Quite possibly.
All right. As opposed to this Mr. Spratt, who was just hazered 11
yes.
times.
Six officers of the emergency support group tried to remove Mr. Spratt from his cell, while two activated their taser stun guns 11 times.
Activated. They're not actually saying, they're not even using tasing as a verb here. They're just saying activated the stun gun.
The two police officers responsible have so far escaped criminal prosecution, but were fined a combined total of $1,950 after a police disciplinary hearing into the incident. Mr. Spratt said he was disgusted the two officers had not been stood down. He said, "They don't deserve to hold a weapon like that if they're just going to use it like a water pistol. It's humiliating for me and disgusting."
There you go. There's your taser watch for Wednesday. Watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Don't taser me, bro.
Also, from the text box, Rick, my little sister said she'll handle that spider in your basement just as long as you hold her purse
okay,
for her.
Thanks so much. Thank you. I appreciate that, jackass. All right. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Dawn, you should actually come over here and look at this and look at this pump. I will, in fact, describe this. So we have the Geek-O-Lantern contest happening right now that is going through Monday, October 25th, and I'll give you a little description before you see this here. So the deal is you submit a picture of a geek-themed, it can be a pumpkin carving, or I think we did decide it could be, you know, turnip, squash, rutabaga, turnip, whatever. You
Mezel
submit
wangle,
exactly.
Whatever that was called.
Fizzy, fizzled, Anyway, and up for grabs, we have four fantastic prizes from ThinkGeek.com, as well as a $100 gift certificate. So, you know, a couple years ago, we did this thing on 888 on August 8th, 2008. It was a sort of speech I gave. It was like a grand, glorious, address to the people of Portland. And as that, for that, one of the logos that Bridget Harper at CBS made was me in this sort of Mao Zedong kind of pose. And I was sort of, I was heard lamenting that it wasn't more like Stalin because that's what I wanted it to look like. This is a long setup to say that a guy has submitted a pumpkin carving. I swear to God, it's me either as Stalin or Hitler. I'm not quite sure. And it is, he's called it an 888 pumpkin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
wow, that's your nose. Those are your sideburns, and you look a little like Lenin.
Yeah,
but
I am doing what appears to be the Hitler salute, right? Did Lenin do that too? Is that like a shared? Is that a shared sort of thing?
Maybe you're pointing off into the future. You're pointing the way for your followers.
I parked over there in Simba. all right, that's a callback, is what that is. So I'll post that here in just a bit. You know, as you're carving that pumpkin. You might cause any number of stainings or infilfenings,
messiness
of the carpet. Well, yeah,
messification.
I said any number of, and so then I felt the need to end in a noun.
Spoilage.
So spoilages or mess. It might go all bad for you. Because here's the thing about pumpkin. You don't really realize that the pumpkin actually just stains like a bastard. I mean, it just does. And I've learned that from experience. This is a true story. Actually, at my home when I was growing up, this is a thing where we were carving a pumpkin one year, and I didn't really realize that the thing about the inside of the pumpkin is it all kind of hangs together like a macrame plant holder. And then it fell onto my shoe, and so I was just basically schlepping a bunch of pumpkin innards around the house for like 5 minutes on the end of my shoe. And then there was just a huge orange trail across the carpet. And my mom didn't, I mean, it just took like weeks and weeks and weeks of scrubbing to get that out of there. So
something else about pumpkins, the way they rot when they go bad is it actually happens on the bottom first. You don't see it for a long time if it's just sitting in one place. And you might not realize that your pumpkin is going bad. Like, say, for example, you have a jack-o'-lantern you carved, and it's sitting in the corner on your hardwood floor in your dining room. And then sometime in December, when you realize that you need to get rid of it and you pick it up, you find that there's a pumpkin-sized circle of black ooze in your
theoretically
floor.
Speaking.
Theoretically, that might happen
not
to someone, not me.
No, someone who's legally distinct from you. For all of these reasons and many more that by definition you cannot anticipate, you want to write down this number to keep it handy. Because I'm not saying you're a filthy person now, but you might inadvertently, exhibit a filthy behavior that is not at all emblematic of you as a human. It's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That is Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner and proprietor of The Cleaning Solution, our very first advertiser here at the Emerson News Network, and we are proud to have his support and to be his business partner. 971-533-3211. Anything in your house touched and despoiled by your feet, whether it's your entryway, whether it's carpet, whether it's at your office, your business, residence, whatever you might have. 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That is Mr. Michael Beatty, owner and operator of The Cleaning Solution. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's do one more story here, then we'll roll Greatest Songs Ever Made, and then we will bring the curtain down on today's program so that Greg Nibbler and Sarah Dillon can get on in here. Don't forget to listen to Don Taylor doing Ham-Fisted Radio today, 4 p.m. Pacific time at PDX.FM, and available later on at hamfistedradio.com. Don Taylor.
Billionaire investor Warren Buffett attended a summit in Washington where he talked about the U.S. economy, and the challenges still ahead for Americans. Buffett also commented on the fight between Democrats and Republicans regarding the Bush tax cuts, which are set to expire at the end of the year.
We're taking in about 15 and a fraction percent of GDP and income in the United States. That isn't enough. We're going to have to get more money from somebody. Now, the question is, do we get more money from the person that's going to serve me lunch today, or do we get it from me? I think we should get it from me.
You know, I was going to say this is really surprising, but then I realized it's because I was confusing him with Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, yeah. No, Warren Buffett's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. Rupert Murdoch, who just sort of seems to be like a gleeful bastard about everything. he's an a-hole, but he just sort of seems jovial about it all.
Well, he was speaking at Fortune's 2010 Most Powerful Women's Summit, where the thing fell off the lectern when Obama spoke. And Buffett said it is important to do things that in some degree rein in the casino aspect of Wall Street.
Wall Street is a strange place where it does a lot of good things, and then it has this casino.
Where lemonade tastes the way it used to.
It's kind of like a church that's, running raffles on the weekends, or something that's appealing to both sides of human nature.
Well, you got cookies at a general store. All right, you are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It's time for another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. You and I were actually just discussing this song the other day. Oh. We were trying to figure out its placement in a film. Hmm. Music, like many art forms, often comes down to the intangible. What separates good from bad, great from good, and good from iconic, it just can't be quantified or explained in any real way. It's just something you feel. It is something that you sense. Add to that the complication, if that's the word, of working inside a sometimes constrained genre. The task of differentiation becomes even more difficult. Songs with fewer moving parts are, by their very nature, harder to make distinctive. As the years go on, the challenge only increases as the variety of new or interesting ways to approach the format dwindles. Creating or discovering a truly emblematic work can become exceptionally rare. But you know such a creation when you hear it. And once heard, some such songs become a benchmark. There's no challenge, no quibble, no quarrel. The final word has been issued. First recorded in 1955, today's track was an answer song, a reply to another artist's release, which had been itself a reply to still another song. As is common in such musical chains, the songs all shared the same basic structure and form, all rooted in the classic blues tradition itself, a somewhat viral form of composition in which songs pass from person to person, place to place, pieces being added, removed, refashioned. This dynamic is still alive and well, by the way. Mainstream pop and hip-hop artists, as well as those in the musical underground, use answer records as a way of boosting their own fame, issuing challenges to rivals, and generally assisting the careers of everyone involved. Often, though, the answer record is simply about the time-honored tradition of braggadocio, about proclaiming one's indisputable superiority to any and all potential challengers. And sometimes, such as in today's song, that boasting carries the unmistakable ring of truth, the sound of a proclamation that a genre's definitive representation has been created. committed to vinyl several times in the decades following its initial release. It wasn't until 1977 that a studio recording managed to capture the song in its full, pounding, bombastic swagger. Producer Johnny Winter was determined to encapsulate what he considered one of the finest songs by one of America's preeminent artists, and he succeeded to an astounding degree. Using a stop-time format familiar to even the most casual music fan, the track begins with a gospel-tinged, low-register shout. Though shout is probably the wrong way to describe it, the sound is more of an overture, half-warning, half-boast, announcing the imminent arrival of something heavy. What follows is a song that almost shouldn't work at all. Consider as you listen that there is no chorus. There is no bridge. There is no solo. In fact, on paper, the song barely seems to exist. Not three chords, not even two. It is effectively one single chord, hammered with an unyielding force that leaves little doubt about the performer's self-confidence. As an A&R man might say, there's no hook. Except that's deceptive because the whole song is a hook. One long, loud proclamation of defiance, power, and masculinity. One that could, perhaps, only come from someone born with the rugged, muscular name of McKinley Morganfield. From his 1977 album, Hard Again, performing one of the greatest songs ever made, this is the man better known as Muddy Waters and Mannish Boy on the Emerson News Network.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything gonna be all right this morning. Oh, yeah. At the age of five, my mother said I'm gonna be the greatest man alive. But now I'm a man, way past 21. I want you to leave me, baby. I have lots of fun. I'm a man. You man sitting on the outside, just me and my mate. You know I made the moon, honey. Come up 2 hours late. Wasn't that a man? The lion I shoot and will never miss. But I make love to a woman, she can't resist. I think I go down to old Kansas too. I'm gonna bring back my second cousin, that's little Johnny Cockeroo.
can make love to you, woman. In 5 minutes time. Ain't that a man?
Yeah!
I spell him. H-I-N. That rather than I'm grown. You man. Well, 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 well. Hey, Harry. 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 Don't hurt me, don't hurt me, child. Don't hurt me, don't hurt me, don't hurt me, child. Well, 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 well.
The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Dawn Taylor. She can make love to you in 5 minutes' time.
And not a moment more.
That's right.
I'm busy. I got places to be.
Mama's got to watch her stories. I don't even know what... Advanced Technology Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include author Bill Carter, as well as our listener and good friend Jenny Hieronymus will be doing the top five Pearl Jam songs you're a dick for not liking. As always, thank you for listening. The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. It is Wednesday, October 6, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. We'll have an encore of Legion of News followed by an encore of this very fine radio program next. Thanks for listening. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.